Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Zelenko Report. And if it's Thursday, it must be Common Ground Campus Day at the Zelenko Report. I'm your host, Brent Hamacek, sitting in the Ann Vandersteel Distinguished Chair of Broadcast Excellence. And today's show, I think you're going to enjoy because we have one guest, but two topics and two very different topics. So after we come back from break, I'm going to bring in my good friend Bob Rubin, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on college campuses and a little bit about the history of Turning Point USA. And after that first segment, we'll come back and we'll talk about ESG and companies and investing and tips that you need to know. So before we go into break, let's thank our sponsors, MyPillow.com and ZStack Life. If you visit either of those sites, put in the code FOUNDATION and buy Dr. Zelenko's product. We'll be right back.
The global currency collapse will wipe out the dollar and many other assets, and the only things that will maintain value during the global debt reset are those with intrinsic value that do not require governments, corporations, or markets to make good on their obligations. At the top of this list of intrinsic assets is physical gold and silver. These precious metals have outlasted every failed civilization and government in human history. And they are non-digital, which means they still hold value even if the power grid fails. The Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company is my go-to source for physical precious metals that are delivered securely and discreetly into your hands. Visit BrighteonMetals.com to check their live pricing and in-stock coins and bars. Find out why they are my trusted source for physical metals and why they're the official sponsor of Brighteon.tv. BrighteonMetals.com. This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now. Post your videos today and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build the quietest suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Zelenko Report. And I am your host, Brent Hamacek. And every Thursday, we get together to talk about things that impact young people. And we're going to do a little bit of that in this segment. And we're going to shift gears a little bit in the one that follows. But for both segments, I am joined by my very dear friend, Bob Rubin, Rubin Wealth Advisors down in Florida. And you think, well, what's he going to talk about that's youth related? Well, Bob and I have a great history together. And as I've shared on this show, I was involved in Turning Point USA in its early days and worked with the organization in writing its original literature. and also wrote Charlie Kirk's first book with him, Time for a Turning Point. Along for that ride has been Bob Rubin, who joins me now. Bob, thanks for being willing to be a guest on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So people can tell this is already going to be overly serious because we're doing an introduction and we're already laughing. So, but we'll try to get serious. Let's start with the easy stuff because I know you're nervous, and just share with everybody a little bit about who you are and your background, and then we're going to talk about college campus life a little bit and about Turning Point USA.
So my name is Bob Rubin. I live the last almost 50 years. And lucky to live here in the free state of Florida, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. And I live down in the southern part of Florida, the Boca Raton area. And I run a financial advisory firm that is very distinctive in one major way, is that we do not take on progressives or liberals as clients. We do have some existing ones, but about 2-3 years ago, we just stopped doing it. And we market exclusively to political conservatives. And the interesting thing about that is people thought that we did that for offensive reasons. And the reality is we did it for defensive reasons because the left was canceling our clients. And that was one. And two, if you give money to places like Merrill Lynch and JP Morgan, they're taking that money and using it actively against you in the way that you think and feel about how this country should be run. So that's one of the things we do. I'm married, 3 kids, 3 great kids actually, and in hockey, car racing, and a bunch of other. I've been known to shoot a gun every once in a while also. So,
right, and hopefully you won't fire one at the screen today if you get angry with me. You've also, in addition to your day job as a wealth advisor, you've also been a board member for Florida Atlantic University, and you are currently a member of their finance court board. So you've been involved with university life and that oversight role, and you've been an advisory board member to Turning Point USA for a very long time. And so the first question I want to ask you is, we talked a little bit about what's going on with young people and campus life and those sorts of things. I always joke that I could give a speech to a crowd on how to build storm doors. And when I'm done giving the speech, I'll say, any questions from the audience? And the first one I always get is, tell us what Charlie Kirk is like. Now, because everybody wants to know. And you've been working with Charlie since the early days. And of course, we all know what he's grown into in terms of a national thought leader. And I say thought leader deliberately because he's not just an activist or a celebrity. I think that that he does show tremendous intellect and is really leading the way in ideas. But you've known him a long time, so I'm going to get to ask you the question people always ask me. And tell our audience a little bit about your thoughts on Charlie Kirk and what you've seen evolve over the last decade.
Well, I guess I'll start with a little bit of humor. I used to say that I probably took more pictures of Charlie Kirk than anybody else for a while, because I'd be sitting there with Charlie when we were about ready to start an event back in the early days, and some they would come up, hey, do you mind taking a picture of Charlie and me? They sure didn't want my picture, they wanted his picture. So I know I took hundreds of pictures of people with Charlie Kirk. When I first met Charlie, I don't remember his exact age, but I think it was 21 or 22 years old. And I was so struck by him, met him in South Florida, actually at a cigar bar. One that I still go to, and he didn't smoke. I don't even think he drinks or smokes now. I don't think he does any of that. And I was struck by the fact that I literally thought this kid's going to be president of the United States someday. And I never thought that about anybody before, but he was so wise beyond his years. Like, you know, we say people are of an old soul, right? You know, okay, so you can say that, but Charlie goes way, way, way beyond that. He really is significantly wise beyond his years. And, you know, he never went to university, right? Graduated high school and that was it. And yet, so he had some missing educational pieces in the early years, but oh my, he sure filled that up. I mean, way beyond you would typically get out of any college education. any major university education. He's just really grown to somebody that is just, I mean, the stuff that he talks about it and the depth of the different types of subject matters. I heard him talk about the Torah a couple of weeks ago. I was like, you know, I read the Torah every week, and I hadn't thought about the stuff that he said about the Torah at that point. I'm like, wow. And he's not even Jewish. And I was like, that was just crazy. And he does that about so many different issues, that his depth of thought on it and his clarity of his thought is astonishing. The other thing that I find really, really cool about Charlie is he really does an amazing job of bringing people together. He's amazing at, like, with hiring young kids, right? Like, you know, hiring young kids nowadays is not easy, right?
Right, it isn't.
He's been doing that successfully for so many years. He manages to attract so many good young people. I mean, look at the alumni that come out of Turning Point. I mean, we do have turnover. I mean, we have a couple hundred employees, almost 300-400 employees now. But, and a lot of part-timers, and they go to, you know, they're at the end of semester. So you do have some natural turnover. It isn't like we lose people for a reason. They only can work there for so long. But the alumni that comes out of this is just shockingly good. I mean, these people, and they go on to very, very successful things. I mean, it's very new, but I believe in the next 10, 15 years, you're going to see some of these kids that come out of Turning Point, I mean, achieve spectacular results. Whether it's in the political world or the business world or whatever world, it doesn't matter. They're going to achieve amazing results. So, and Charlie's a big part of that. He really does attract really, really good people around him, hundreds of them. And not just on the kids' side, Brendan. I don't know how long you want me to talk about Charlie. I could talk about it a long time.
I'm letting you go. I mean, you're self-regulating, so there's no rules.
So when I first, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. So when we first started working with Charlie, or maybe a year or two after, we started helping raise a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. And I realized that all these wealthy people that were around him, it wasn't, we weren't attracting people for the kids. It was these older people. And when I say older, my age, that have kids and that will even have grandchildren, they wanted their daughter to marry Charlie. I mean, it was like that's what they really thought about him. Charlie's happily married, kid, the whole bit. That's not it. But this is what they thought. And that was one thing that they thought he was so wholesome, so amazing. They're like, never mind, I'm going to give this kid a lot of money. Like, he needs to marry my daughter, my granddaughter. Like, how often does a guy gives, you know, $500,000 to an organization think that? And yet these are, you know, wealthy, you know, people worth 10, 50, 100 million, even billionaires. You know, I've heard that, you know, I've heard that more than one time. So that in itself is astonishingly good. And I mean, there's a lot more, but that's kind of enough. This is, he really is an astonishing guy.
That's pretty good. Yeah. It's you're describing the stuff of royalty almost, right? You know, marry into the family, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, I always just say to people, they say, what is Charlie Kirk like? I say, he's a freak show. We've never seen anything like him. And by the way, he knows I describe him that way. So let's talk about your involvement with Turning Point. And over this past decade, what kind of challenges have you seen the organization have as it tries to step out onto college campuses and be accepted? And, you know, they're about free markets and first principles and constitutional ideas. Those seem to be very controversial things. I know you've been along for that whole ride. Tell our audience about some of the issues and resistance that the organization has faced during that time as it's been growing.
So I would say, first of all, one of the things that Charlie and a few others did at the beginning was not to go into the social issues, not to go into the abortion, the gay rights, gay marriage, and all that kind of stuff. They just kind of stayed away from that, which was more controversial. And they've gotten more into the abortion stuff now, but back then we weren't really into that at all. It was really about free markets. It was almost, you know, Atlas Shrugged kind of thing, right? It was that.
We love Atlas Shrugged shout outs, by the way. Go ahead.
So it was, you know, we didn't have John Galt on the board, but it was close, right? Like, you know, good guys, right? So we did a good job of staying away from the really, really contentious issues. But you'd think, even with stuff like free markets, right, free enterprise, and and individual freedoms and property rights and things like that, that that wouldn't be controversial, but it was and it is, right? And you know, socialists do not believe in free markets. They don't believe in free enterprise, and they don't believe in property rights, except the only people that have the property rights are the state, you know, central government and all that, right? So when we would go on to campuses and talk about that stuff, there was a lot of pushback, right? And Charlie did all the stuff like, you know, he'd set the table up, bring up a topic, prove me wrong, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? But, you know, there was huge amounts of pushback from the left, just trying to get on campus, right? Like at the school that I'm involved with, I mean, we had trouble getting an advisor. You always have to, you know, one of the things in universities that people don't know, and I don't know if you want me to get into this, Brent, but how it works getting on the university campus.
No, please do. I think it's good to educate our audience on the kinds of obstacles that are faced, because I'm sure a lot of people think, well, how hard can it be? You want to set up a group, so you set up a group. They can't imagine it being more complex than that.
That's just far from the truth. So sometimes you'll hear Charlie say, we have 1,100 chapters on college campuses. And then you hear him say 1,500. And then sometimes you'll say 1,200 or 900, and then 2,000. You say, well, why is there inconsistency? There's a really good reason for that. And the reason is that every year you have to set up your chapter, your group again. Like there's no follow through. It doesn't just carry over to the next year. So, and then you have to go through the same process that they have the first. So you think, you know, once you did it, it's easy. The next one, it's just perfunctory. You know, you check a few boxes and you move on. It isn't like that at all. So, and because especially visits us, they make it look like they really make you check all the boxes. I don't know this, but I'm going to say this. And if I get in trouble, I don't really care. I assume the student gay and lesbian transgenderish club gets a pass most of the time because whatever. Turning Point does not. So if we have, for example, all the clubs have to have a faculty advisor. Almost every university in the country, that's who I know, has to have that. So some guy, gal, has to stand up and say, you know, their professor, I'll be the advisor for Turning Point. Well, there's a lot of campuses. If you admit that you're a conservative, you're done. You're in big trouble. You can be a quiet conservative. You can shut your mouth. You can be an obedient conservative. Like we know he's a conservative, but he doesn't say anything. He behaves himself. So we're going to leave him alone. He'd be the token conservative. But if you want to be that guy that stands up and says, look, I want to be the advisor for Turning Point. You're not obedient anymore. And they're going to come down and they're going to start beating you up a little bit. So every year we have to have an advisor. Well, so the advisor decides. So some guy gets up and he says, well, all right, I'll be the advisor this year. Well, he does it, but I can tell he's getting hammered. They just do. They make their life miserable. The dean will do it. The assistant, associate deans, they all, other professors in his department, they make these lives miserable. And so, and by the way, when I'm saying guy, I'm being gender neutral. So,
right. The proverbial guy.
The proverbial
in air quotes. Right.
Yeah. So now what happens next year, we need to re-up for the chapter. And the guy says, you know, geez, I need to take a break. I am sick of getting the crap beat out of me by 37 different people. And so that's why. So you have to have a student. You have to have a faculty advisor. You got to get a student to stand up to say, you know, he's going to do it. And, you know, these students move on. You know, they're there for 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years, and they're done. And they, you know, usually the student doesn't start doing this until they're in their junior year. So they really just have a couple years left over. So there's always a turnover in most of these clubs, right? Now we're more established now, so people know about Turning Point. So you'll have, you know, we're so involved with student government. Now, that was a big thing that we did about 6 or 7 years ago, the whole student victory program. So, because we now help run for presidents and all that stuff. Well, it's gotten a little bit easier, but geez, Brent, it's hard. You know, they're constantly pushing you, trying to push you off campus. So that's why there's a constant turnover. There's a constant change of amount of chapters that we have. It's just, you know, and now it's, by the way, we're in March, so coming up in a couple months, we're going to start again.
Start all over
next
again.
Year for, you right. know, it's going to end in April, May, and then we start again for August. And that's just the way that works.
So it's interesting. Right now, Common Ground Campus is trying to do an event with a major West Coast university. And one of the challenges we're having in working with Turning Point on that event is their new chapter trying to get a faculty advisor. They found one, and now the school is objecting to who they pick as a faculty advisor. So not only is it a challenge to get your charter approved, then once you have it approved and you need an advisor on campus to formally complete the process, they might even object to who you pick, even if they're a legitimate faculty member. So the obstacles are everywhere. I want to go back before I ask you the next question and just make note of something, because in your opening, you talked about Charlie bringing people in. I'd like our audience to know that it was Charlie who made possible the Common Ground Campus nonpartisan Bridging the Divide program. Made it possible with Turning Point by allowing the group to present at their summer conference down in Tampa, Florida this past year. So for anyone who thinks that he serves only red meat, I can assure you that there's vegetables that go along as well. And so we're grateful that he gave us that opportunity. You've spent time, and you're spending time with Florida Atlantic University. And I know that in your tenure there, you've seen some interesting things. And so stepping outside of an outside organization and stepping inside of a university, what are the kinds of things you have observed during that time period in that role?
So I've spent almost 12 years as a trustee, and being a trustee is that's the highest level board you can be on. The only thing higher is being the chairman of the board, and the president works for us. I was also on the member of the foundation board, which is the fundraising arm. And now I do serve on our finance board, finance corp board, which is where like all the money is and for real estate and that kind of stuff. You know, I saw a lot. I've always been pretty conservative, politically conservative. Some would say I'm to the right of Attila Hahn. They just don't understand Attila Hahn clearly. They think
right. Well, a lot of people reference him and they never really actually met him. I'm not sure of what his politics were, but go ahead.
So I would say I was amazed at the complete lack of caring, wondering, or trying to be affected by what happened outside of the four walls of the university. So even when we put, Governor Scott, Rick Scott was governor before DeSantis, he put in place accountability metrics. We call them Board of Governors, which is the state board for the university system, the state university SUS system. And he made us put into effect accountability metrics for all different things. And one of the things, for example, would be what would be the salary, the average salary that a person gets in obtaining this four-year degree, and he gets out and he goes to work, how much is he going to make, right? And that would be one example. How long it takes for you to graduate, what's the average for the university? Things that you'd think, well, they didn't do that before. Like, why wouldn't they keep track of that stuff, right? Like, This is all pretty basic stuff, right? They couldn't have cared less. So one of the things that at the university that you do as a trustee is you have to decide whether a program should go ahead or not. So they had this Department of Education chair coming up, and she got up there and she started talking about this program they're going to do. And she mentions ecofeminism. And I'm like, ecofeminism? You know, I'm sitting there with the other board members and I'm thinking, I don't know what that means, right? And, you don't want to be an idiot and like so obvious you just didn't get it. But finally, I'm looking, they don't have any idea. Put my hand up. Dean, what is ecofeminism? She had no idea. So she had to bring up even a more crazy professor. And I said, Professor, what is ecofeminism? She said, it's women's ability to get in touch with their inner self through ecology. I said, well, I heard all those words, but I have no idea what they mean. Right. And it just kind of went on from there. So this is just one example of the ridiculousness. And then so after going through all this, because it's a much longer story than we have, I said, you can't teach that stuff to our kids. Like it was a fight that we had. Like, what is teaching a kid about ecofeminism going to help him in a job? Now, maybe if you're a gender studies person, it might help you in whatever you do. But that's some of the crazy stuff that we had to deal with as a trustee.
And of course, in your free state of Florida, Governor DeSantis makes news, it seems, week after week by attacking curriculum, not just at the university level, but at state universities, but also below the collegiate level in K through 12. I'm guessing that you're somewhat supportive of those efforts.
It's glorious. It's totally glorious what he's doing. I've been fighting DEI and CRT with what we had. It was a very weak board. You know, a lot of Republicans just didn't have the guts to do anything about this. And now we're actually doing something about this. He's not just coming out against it. I mean, he's forbidding it from occurring on the university campuses. I mean, it's and the left is out of their minds. They don't even know what to do. I mean, they have never been punched back at by a conservative like DeSantis ever. I mean, Reagan, okay, I love Reagan, but he never went back at liberalism like this. DeSantis is the man.
Yeah, I think, and I've said this on many occasions, I think you can easily make the argument that given the moment in time in which he has been governor and given the things that he's doing, Ron DeSantis is the most consequential governor of importance in American history. And that sounds like, God, that's an outrageous statement. But it's not just about what you do. It is about the times in which you do it. So I think that that's what makes him special. I'm with Bob Rubin, everybody. We're going to come back after the break, and we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about environmental and social governance. So stay with us.
Hi, I'm Titus.
I'm Isaac.
We are the Smith Bros, and we love Uncensored Truth. This is why you need to be with Brighteon TV. They're so awesome. Go to Brighteon TV right now.
Right now.
Riots, recession, food prices, gas prices, violation of our liberties. These issues are keeping Americans awake at night. Sleepless nights aren't good for your health. Millions are suffering from sleep gap disorder. I'm Dr. Steve Hodgson, and I have a natural solution to overcome this dreaded sleep gap disorder, my proprietary sleep formula. One capsule of sleep formula will help you achieve a great night's sleep for as little as 75 cents per night. Visit our website, physicianspreferencevitamins.com, and enter the promo code SLEEPNOW. It's hard to stand up against tyranny when you're tired. Pray for our country and get a good night's sleep.
Have you noticed there's something very wrong with the modern day man?
Are you a beta male?
I don't think so.
Beta!
Sperm counts are cratering.
Maybe it's male.
0% by 2050. But help is on the way. Keys to Life.shop has products which are making men, men again. Banned by the NFL, PGA, and the NCAA. Too manly. Clinically proven to raise IGF-1 levels. Man up. Take off the dress. Visit Keys to Life.shop. Get your manhood back today.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
You want to see?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Zelenko Report. Still your host, Brent Hamacek, and still with my guest, Bob Rubin. And we're going to shift topics now. We've been talking about Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, all things college through the first segment. But Bob also happens to be, in his regular life as a financial advisor, a subject matter expert on what's known as environmental and social governance policies, and shortened always to ESG. This is essentially, and I'm going to let Bob explain it more because it's his wheelhouse, but this is essentially something that's arisen over the past decade plus that sets an expectation on corporations not just to focus on return on investment and return on to shareholders, but also about being what some would define as being good global citizens. And of course, this can lead to a distortion in markets and a distortion in the way companies behave. Now, just yesterday, the Senate has passed a resolution to fight back against President Biden's orders with regard to large companies in ESG policies, setting up what will be likely a veto from President Biden and an ongoing battle over ESG policies and compliance. So Bob, welcome back. So now we're going to put your financial advisor hat on. I mean, you speak on this subject, you write on this subject, and you counsel your clients on this subject. So let's start by giving a brief primer to the audience on ESG.
So ESG, as you said, is environmental, some say social, society, and governance. And it's basically a way of measuring corporate performance that is not financial in nature. And it could be, you know, for social aspect, it could be for other stakeholder type things. It could be to make sure that you're doing a social justice stand. It's something that isn't other than just creating wealth or the balance sheet or the income statement of the company.
Perfect. By the way, since we were talking about Turning Point in the last segment, I'll mention to people that if they go to the Turning Point website, there are some really great booklets that Turning Point has published on the World Economic Forum, and including this idea of ESG and what's called stakeholder capitalism, a term that Klaus Schwab himself actually coined, the head of the World Economic Forum. So in your writings and your talks, you try to counsel investors away from investing in the types of companies that really focus on ESG sort of activity and compliance. Make the argument. Tell us why.
So there's an old saying that says go woke, go broke, right? And some people would argue the other way because there are conservatives that have reasons for complaining about ESG and progressives have reason for saying ESG is great. So, you know, it kind of goes both ways. But I think it kind of goes like this, that when a big company starts paying attention to things other than what they do to make money, they're going to start losing their focus, right? And you're going to start, you know, as soon as you start getting political, you're going to piss off one side or the other. That doesn't make much sense. You know, you need to be in the business to make cookies. You need the business to make movies. You got to be in the business to, you know, offer web service. Whatever your business is, it doesn't really matter. But when you start talking, if you're in the business of making movies and you start talking about environmental concerns, and you start talking about trans issues, that's just not what you're doing. You're supposed to be entertaining people. And so, I mean, the biggest example, and it was funny because we wrote a list of the top 10 companies that we thought were the worst at being woke. One of them on our list was Disney. And we wrote this before DeSantis started going after Disney because they went out. See, this is what's interesting. They didn't just, you want to talk about going woke. They didn't just say, oh, it's not good enough just for us that that the person who runs their movies or number two in their movies said, we're actually going to have 50% of the characters that are in our kids' movies are going to be trans or gay. Oh, I'm sorry, people of color, trans or gay. I want to make sure I get that straight. Well, okay, that's bad enough. It's horrendous, actually. But then when DeSantis came out with what they all call the Don't Say Gay bill, what the bill really said was that you can't talk about transgender and gay things for kids up to six, 7 years old, whatever it is. I mean, how could you object to that, right? You know, have age-appropriate instruction in schools, you know, nursery school, kindergarten, first, second grade, third grade. Well, they came out actively against it and did everything they could to get the thing not to pass, which, by the way, in all sorts of ways was with reasons as far as Disney was concerned was stupid, because we have a majority in the House, majority in the Senate in Florida, and we also had DeSantis. So, like, it was no win by doing that, and they just pounded on DeSantis, and DeSantis said, well, I'm just going to pound back, and made their life miserable. The CEO ended up getting fired over it. And Bob Iger came back in, and now Reedy Creek, which is where Walt Disney's based in Florida, is no longer under the control of Walt Disney. It's now under the control of a state board. So it made absolutely no sense to do it. So a specific example of doing that for Disney was pretty bad, and it lost a lot of value in the stock and all that. So that's just one example of companies that, you know, go woke, go broke applies.
So one of the things that I thought was interesting, and when you know if you go on Google, which is always a good way to get unbiased search results, if you go on Google and you search financial performance of ESG companies, you're going to find a tremendous amount of information showing how ESG companies tend to perform better in their stock price. But as I read that, I kind of think it's a little bit like this, that if you have 10 people who each take 3 aspirin and then drink a quart of gasoline and then light a match in their mouth, you could say that taking 3 aspirin causes you to explode spontaneously. However, the cause and effect might be off. So what I found difficult in reading these different reports that came out of this wonderful unbiased Google search engine is that, okay, there's companies that are doing ESG and their stock is doing well, but how on earth are you attributing cause and effect to that properly? So how does the investor sort through this? How do they understand what's real and what's not? What do they do? Because the typical person, of course, we know that most people who invest money, they don't invest it. Somebody invested for them. They don't know how to evaluate these things. They kind of only, I don't know, they only know what they read on a Google research result.
So there's a lot of moving parts to this. The first thing to understand when we talk about ESG compliance and all that is there's a lot of standards on ESG. And they're moving every day because they're not financial standards that you're trying to get a return on equity, you're trying to increase your price per share. They're nebulous kind of non-quantitative type measurements. So they almost don't mean anything, because even if one did, it changes later, right? And so you really shouldn't pay a lot of attention to that. The other thing that's going on, I just sort of want to put out there, is yesterday or the day before, Vanguard came out and said they're not doing ESG anymore, which is huge. That's a seriously big deal, right? So I also don't think you can not do ESG, because it's kind of so built in nowadays. But you can, as an investor, there are services out there that do the other side of it. There's Second Vote. There's American Conservative Values Fund. Strive. There's a few funds out there that use proprietary measures to try to not have the most woke companies in a portfolio. So there are alternatives for you to do that. And if conservatives would just vote with their pocketbook, a lot of this ESG would just go away.
Yeah, it's interesting. So one of the things that I've been personally have been talking about and writing about for a very long time now, for well over half a decade, is something that I think that people never really anticipated, including going back to Karl Marx. And that is, we always knew that capitalism would come under attack by people who wanted to level things. And, you know, from Marx's standpoint, it was the proletariat rising up, right? So it's sort of, we've always seen it as a battle of the have-nots against the haves. And those were the ones that were going to tear at and pull down capitalism. I think what defenders of free markets have never really been prepared for is that the actual people who lead the companies that have benefited from free markets would be involved in destroying it themselves. So you could see it coming from a different direction, but I don't know that anybody ever really anticipated that, say, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, who grew to such wealth and prominence because of free market activities, would flip around and then do things to attack a free market. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this sort of self-annihilating behavior that large companies have adopted here through this ESG thing. And is Vanguard's move, do you think, is it a change of philosophy? I mean, do they really think, oh, this stuff isn't right? Or are they just simply making a mathematical adjustment because financially isn't working? If I ask the question in a way that's understandable, which I rarely do.
But I understand you. I am one of the few that understand
that's,
you.
That's good. So we're both wearing
folks. Your question.
We've got like a United Nations earpiece in, folks, so that when I speak, it translates to Bob. So he's actually able to understand what I meant or what I wish that I had meant. So go ahead, answer the question that I rambled on about.
You brought up a lot in that question. So the first thing I would say is why do these CEOs self-annihilate themselves? There's a couple of reasons for that, and I've thought about this. Why are these companies hurting themselves? I guess I'd narrow it down to three. One is they're weakling Republicans. They're rhinos, they're gutless, all that kind of stuff. And they're going to go along, finger up in the air, which way is it going? It's an easier thing to do, right? The second reason is that where do you think all these gender studies and female studies and crazy studies college graduates went to? Where do you think they actually got jobs? They got jobs in the HR department of all these companies, and they're putting all this crap out. So they're actually inundating this self-annihilating CEO with constant bombardment of stuff about why ESG is so important. And the third reason, and this one's kind of insidious, is they just look at it as a way to make money, and it's easier. And you know, if we get high on an ESG score, we're just going to go along with it, and we make more money. We're more valuable. We're going to go up in the rankings. So they don't really believe in it, because I mean, even if they're a woke CEO, or you know, but generally they're going to be Republicans. If they're running a company that makes widgets, why do they want to worry about saving the world or saving the earth in Nigeria? If they're making widgets in Asia and the United States, like, you know, and that's stick to your knitting, right? So that's probably the main thing. Those three reasons why they're doing it in the first place.
Yeah, and of course, it's always sort of rank with hypocrisy inside of all of these efforts. I mean, there's no better example than the celebrities that, as Ricky Gervais has said, you know, just shut up and don't lecture us about how we're supposed to give things up, you know, when they live in giant homes and fly on private jets and have more wealth amassed than they possibly can. And then they turn to us and they tell us to do better, right? While meanwhile, they live with all the trappings and the luxuries of what they've earned. You talked about the culture moving from the classroom to the boardroom. That is something, by the way, that Charlie Kirk's talked about for 10 years. That's straight out of Turning Point lexicon, and we can all see that happening. Is there a way to reverse this other than time? Is there anything investors can do with their money to, you know, we hear a lot about boycotts, right? Everybody talks about boycotts. And going back again to Turning Point and Charlie, his idea always is to have a boycott. And that is to buy the things of companies that aren't doing this stuff, as opposed to boycotting the companies that are. But what, if anything, can you actually do to change this? Or can you, except to work with young people and have a whole new set of folks grow up through the system?
So I'm going to answer that question like this from the standpoint of a potential prospect of ours that would, you know, has $1 million to invest, and do they go to a Merrill Lynch, or which is owned by Bank of America, one of the worst of them all, or JP Morgan?
They were on your list. They were on your list of 10 companies to stay away from.
They both were on the list, right? They're both bad companies, right? Yeah. And so one of the ways is that you can use advisors like us. There's a few of us that are out there, not many, and we do everything we can to buy and not buy the right thing. So, for example, there's a fund out there, American Conservatives Value Fund. It's basically a large capitalization growth fund, like the S&P 500, right? And they have, instead of 500 stocks, they have about 440 stocks in there. And they get about 99% of the performance. They basically match the performance of the S&P 500 while having about 60 of the most woke stocks not in the portfolio. So the most you can do, truthfully, frankly, is you can take about, you can reduce the wokeness in your portfolio by about 20% without cutting your nose to spite your face and all that, right? So you can do that right now. And I really believe if we do that, that number is going to start increasing because as money moves from the most woke companies to the least woke companies, the most woke companies are going to say, well, I don't like that. And they're going to start changing their behavior. And the least woke companies are going to be more successful and attract more capital. So when capital flows, it's just like red state, blue state. When capital flows from blue states to red states, you're going to get really reactive behavior like you're seeing right now in blue states, the reactive behavior they're getting. And you haven't seen that in the woke versus non-woke companies, but except maybe for Disney. Disney did pay a price, and they are paying a price. They've paid actually quite a big price. Maybe companies will say, I don't really want to pay that price anymore. So it's basically by reducing the amount of the woke companies you have in your portfolio can help you and help the cause. You can be part of the conservative cause and movement, but not and continue to help yourself financially as your portfolio grows.
It's one of the challenges for people always when they're being asked to not do something because by doing it, they're supporting something that isn't, let's just say, isn't good for lack of, I'm not good with words, so we'll just say that isn't good because I can't articulate it better. So you say, we don't want you to do this, but if you don't do it, you're doing a good thing, but you're going to somehow or other harm yourself in the short term. For example, I'll be more concrete. There's all sorts of folks out there who are object to Amazon. Amazon even made your list of companies. But let's face it, they do what they do better than anyone's ever done in history. I mean, I noticed at 6 o'clock in the morning a couple of weeks ago, I was out of protein shakes in my refrigerator. I went on Amazon, ordered them, and they were dropped off at my house at 9 a.m. So it's really difficult to stay away from Amazon and not inconvenience yourself. And so in this case, from an investment perspective, people are saving for their retirements and their kids' colleges. And so you try to say, stay away from these companies, but some of these companies, again, have very good returns, not because of ESG, right? We talked about that a moment ago, but because the things they sell do well and people buy them. So right. If I hear you right, what you're offering to people is a way to stay away from these companies and do good, but also not be harmed by investing in other companies and funds that don't follow these policies.
Yeah, it's not perfect because, like I said, you can't do 100% of no woke companies. You'd run out of companies to invest in. You wouldn't be able to do it. And that's why I said 20%, sometimes between 15 and 25% depends. And you can eliminate that percentage of wokeness out of your portfolio. If you go further than that, your Amazon's a good example. Am I not going to use Amazon, you know, because I don't like Jeff Bezos and he owns the Washington Post, and I'm going to take five more days and drive, you know, 25 miles to get a pen, right? Like I'm sorry, I'm going to go to Amazon. That's what's going to happen, right? So I will go so far. Now I'll try to use Office Depot instead of Amazon, for example. They are less woke than Amazon. So I do try. But the more we all do that and the more we're conscious of that, the more what's going to happen is you're going to see capital flowing from the most woke to the least woke companies. You'll see wokeness go away. You'll see all this ESG go away because a lot of companies will say it's just not worth it. And I'm even getting the sense in a lot of companies right now, they're sort of talking the game, but in regard to ESG, and they're not really, it's all, they know it's BS. And it's kind of like what's going on with the DEI stuff in companies that all these people they hired after the George Floyd situation, these crazy DEI consultants, and they put them in $200,000 a year jobs inside their HR department. they've all realized they're both dead in jobs and they're just quitting, or they're getting fired because they don't do anything. So
you're the message to people, and this fits in with the dissident model that I created a couple years ago in a piece that I published. One of the things is work within the system to change the system, and also understand that this is a very long game. So we're all inside of this economy that's been built. Don't destroy yourselves by thinking you can never order from Amazon or buy a particular stock, but order less and buy different stocks when you can, and do it over time and be patient, because we didn't get here overnight and we're not going to get out of it overnight. So play the long game and play it within the system. Bob, we've got just about a minute left. Please tell people how to find you, follow you, give you money, all those things. Do the Bob Rubin commercial, which you're so good at.
So name of my firm is Rubin Wealth Advisors. You can find us at rubinwa.com, rubinwa.com. And if you click on in there, Rubin Report, you'll see all of our articles that we've written on ESG. We've written on all these woke companies. There's all sorts of good stuff in there and some really good ideas you just do for investments that you'll just make you money and it'll help you out. We're on Twitter, BBRubin1, I think it is, or RubinWA on Twitter. You can just type Rubin Wealth Advisors and you'll find us on the different social medias, a little bit on YouTube. But mostly just go to our website. We spend a lot of time trying to keep everything updated there, especially on the article side. So RubinWA.com or RubinWealthAdvisors.com. Thank you.
Bob Rubin, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the Zelenko Report.